Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome to the show. It is Friday, and I can't wait to spend this hour with you. It's Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Here's the number to call to talk to me for free. 1-888-914-914. And I got a great show lined up for you today. 1-888-914-9149. You can also reach me by email if you have a question or comment about the show. Love to hear from you. Great for show ideas. You can email me Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. And of course, follow me on Twitter, which is apparently under new ownership. We talked about that yesterday, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. We'll see if my follower count will continue to be artificially suppressed. Should be in the millions now, right? Well, somebody who does have legitimately way more than a million followers on Twitter is basketball coach John Calipari, Hall of Fame coach of the University of Kentucky Wildcats. And just a wild story ensued this week because of a viral photo that was snapped at a Kentucky sort of scrimmage. It's called the Blue and White Game. It's kind of an inter-squad scrimmage that happens every fall. And Coach Calipari, Coach Cal as he's known, turned a Kentucky coal miner into really a viral celebrity. But it's just a beautiful story about fatherhood and the dignity of work. And Kyle Tucker wrote a great piece about this in The Athletic. And here's what he says, and I'm going to quote him here. He says, quote, as one might imagine, cell reception isn't great at the bottom of a mine shaft in eastern Kentucky, so Michael McGuire had no idea that the internet was buzzing about him or that a Hall of Fame coach was searching for him on Monday morning. He left for work at 4:45 a.m., dropped down deep into the coal mine by 6:30, and had no contact with the outside world until he got above ground again at 4 p.m. When he emerged, the second shift crew was waiting to greet him with a round of applause. He didn't know what was going on. He said, this is Michael McGuire, the coal miner. He said, it caught me off guard big time. Everybody was saying, hey, here comes the celebrity. Here comes that famous guy. He had no clue what was happening. What was happening is this. Coach John Calipari had saw a photograph that was making the rounds on social media, went viral, and it was of Michael McGuire covered in soot, still wearing his work uniform from the coal mine. He went straight from a shift in the mines to take his three-year-old son named Easton to the Kentucky Blue-White scrimmage in Pikeville. It happened on Saturday. And it's just amazing. Somebody just saw this guy with his son and said, wow, this is amazing. This guy came straight from work in the mines to take his son to the game, snapped a picture of it, posted it on Facebook, and there it went, and Calipari saw it. And he really wanted to meet this guy. Here's what he tweeted. He tweeted, and I retweeted this the other day when he posted this. Coach John Calipari said, my family's American dream started in a Clarksburg, West Virginia coal mine. So this picture hits home. From what I've been told, after his shift, this guy raced to be with his son and watch our team. I don't know who this is, but I have tickets for him and his family at Rupp Arena to be treated as VIPs. Well, one of the people that saw his tweet was Michael McGuire's wife, Molly. And she immediately hopped on Twitter and said, that's my husband. That is my husband. And believe it or not, Calipari called her. Coach Cal called her on his personal cell phone later that day. This is amazing. And Molly, here's what Molly had said. She said, that Coach Cal called her and he said, hey, it's Coach Cal. And she's just like, wow, is this really happening? They spoke for about half an hour. And that's where Calipari told her the story about how his grandfather was also a coal miner. He passed away before John Calipari was old enough to really understand any of that. But he said this, I wanted to know what I came from. So Sometime not too long ago, Coach Calipari actually went into a coal mine with a crew, and as they were going down deep into the mine, they told him, hey, we all go in together and we come out together. No one is left behind because we're one crew. And he said, that's exactly what I teach my team at the University of Kentucky. We're one team. We can only do it together. And Molly Maguire said, just to know that somebody that popular, somebody that famous took the time and wanted to do something like this for me and my family, that is amazing. And Coach Calipari talked about this in a press conference at the University of Kentucky. We've got some audio from this. Check it out.
He wanted to be there so bad that he was willing to leave without showering, without change, just get in his car and go because he got out of the mine late. What about that? Is that he wanted to be there with his son. She said, do you know his beard is red? And I said, what do you mean? He said, that was coal dust in his beard. You got hotels calling, we want to put him up. You got restaurants calling, we want to feed him dinner. You had a car dealership, call them, we'll give you a car to drive out. Think about this. And isn't it neat for someone like that, who's a quiet, humble guy, to know people appreciate you and we appreciate what you stand for? And I appreciate it because it's how my family got their start in this country. I've done some things that have been fulfilling for my wife and I. But this, you'd have to say, you're bringing light to a good man, a hardworking Kentuckian, a coal miner, who does everything he can to make time for his family and his son and his daughter.
All right, that was Coach John Calipari talking about this viral picture that was snapped, how he responded to it. And how he's going to make Michael Maguire and his family, his wife Molly, and their son Easton, they have a daughter too, VIPs at a Kentucky game real soon. By the way, there's producer Jim playing piano in the background there. Very nicely done. That really added something to it, Jim. But anyways, Molly Maguire, Michael's wife, just back to the article, she was quoted in The Athletic as saying that, you know, she just couldn't wait to tell her husband about all this. He was still in the coal mine when John Calipari called her. She couldn't wait to tell Michael about it, but he didn't actually pick his cell phone. Didn't, you know, being underground for a while, it takes a little bit to get those bars back on your phone. So he was halfway home, driving home, when his cell phone finally connected, and then it was just nothing but ding, 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 ding. All these messages were coming through. His phone was just blowing up. He said, "What is happening?" And he finally figured it out. He got back home and Coach Cal called back and talked to Michael personally around 5:30 p.m. and thanked him for what he does for his family. And that's just a really tear-jerking moment for that family. And seeing all these strangers thanking her husband, appreciating what he does for their family was absolutely incredible. And so Coach Calipari told him, hey, pick any home game on our schedule. And Molly's kind of thinking they might go to the Kentucky-Tennessee game on February the 18th. He's going to take them out for dinner. He's going to take them to the pregame shoot-around. He's going to have a meet-and-greet with his players and give them courtside seats at Rupp Arena. So really, really cool. By the way, Michael Maguire is 29 years old. He's been working in the mines for about a year. Before that, he was a mail carrier. And he did not know that, being a big basketball fan, of course, he was unaware, though, that Calipari's family also had a history with mining. And That's what happened. So really, really cool. I love it. I absolutely love this story. It's a great story about fatherhood and just the dedication of this guy. And by the way, this is a normal event for Michael Maguire to go straight from work to one of his son's T-ball games or some other family event. He, always covered in coal dust, and they kind of take it as a point of pride. And they say, hey, it's just what you've got to do around those parts to make a living. And he works about 50 hours a week underground. And I think a lot of people would be, if somebody could actually go down into those mines, and I've never been into a coal mine, but I'm sure that would create just a whole new level of respect for the kind of work that these guys do. And of course, everyone is really trying to move everybody off into clean energy. I'm not saying that's a bad idea, but people still do work in coal mines in places like West Virginia and Kentucky, and people need to know that. I did see the picture. This guy, I'm shocked to hear Coach Calipari said this guy's beard is actually red. You would never know from this photo. It just looked absolutely black, covered in soot. Amazing. And so just a really cool story about fatherhood, and I'm sure many of you have stories like that as well, about sacrifices that your dad has made for you. And as we're going into the weekend, you're going to get to spend some time with your family. It'd be cool to hear some of those stories. 888-914-9149. So it's just a great story about the importance of family. Family first, the dignity of work. There is nothing wrong with that job. It is honest work. Someone has to do it. Work is not a punishment for sin. It's something that we Catholics know, but a lot of people don't know. The dignity of work, the dignity of the worker. This all goes back to the book of Genesis. The book of Genesis. Right now we're looking at the book of Exodus on the Faith Explained show, the second book in the Bible. But in Genesis chapter 1, when we did the Genesis series, I really made a point to highlight that Adam, the first man, had a job to do before sin came into the world. A lot of people think that work is a punishment for sin. It's not. Some of the stuff that goes with work these days, some of the toil and sweat, yeah, maybe that's a punishment, but kind of passed down. But work itself is a gift. And the job that Adam had was to till and to keep the garden. It's really interesting because the words in Hebrew that are used in Genesis chapter 1 for this, to till and to keep, are the same words that are used later in the Bible to talk about the work of the priests in the temple. Of course, in that inner sanctuary, the Holy of Holies in the temple, that was actually a copy. It was made to be a copy of the Garden of Eden. And that's why the menorah is there. It was really meant to be looking like the Tree of Life, that seven-branch candelabra. And so there are all these garden decor items, if you will, in the Holy of Holies. And so really what's being said there is that Adam is a priest and king over all creation. And that's what we share in our baptism in Jesus Christ. Jesus was priest, prophet, and king, all in the same person. It's amazing. You know, everybody thought there was going to be three different people. You know, there's King David, of course, in the Old Testament. There are the prophets of the Old Testament, like the prophet Isaiah. And then, of course, there were the priests. Aaron, the great high priest, Moses' brother, we read about him in the book of Exodus. But Jesus really combines those offices into one person. He is prophet, priest, and king. And we share in that through our baptism, every single one of us. Of course, we have ministerial priests in the Catholic Church that dispense the sacraments to us, and we need them. But there is also something, even in the Catholic Church, called the priesthood of all believers, and that comes through our baptism. We have to bring other people to God and understand that the world is holy. It's a gift from God. There's a lot of sin in the world, but the world was created to be good, and work was a good gift from God and still is. So this really speaks to that dignity. And just everything on fatherhood as well is so great. And kind of another thing I was reading, just real quick, we'll get your phone calls in just a second. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. I've been reading a book about the New England Patriots dynasty. I've read a few of them, actually, man. I kind of did a deep dive into this. I read the book by Ian O'Connor, great writer Ian O'Connor, on Coach Belichick. It's just called Belichick, Coach Bill Belichick. Great read. Flew through that. I read a book by Jeff Benedict called The Dynasty. Loved it. Amazing. And now I'm reading a book by former Sports Illustrated writer Seth Wickersham called It's Better to Be Feared. It's Better to Be Feared. And it's just a bit of a different take. And one of the things that was in that book, he was talking about Tom Brady. And of course, last night, Tom Brady's Buccaneers lost again. They're 3-5 now. They've lost, I think, five of their last six games.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Producer Jim's pretty excited about this. He does not like Tom Brady. He's an old St. Louis Rams fan. So he still thinks the Patriots cheated to win Super Bowl 36. But anyways, there's a bit in the book about Tom Brady's relationship with his dad, Tom Sr., who basically started up his own insurance business, built it from the ground up, traveled a lot. And here's just a quote from the book, It's Better to Be Feared. It says, quote, Tom Sr. left early each morning and traveled the region trying to build his insurance business. He returned home by 6 p.m. when his son would inevitably ask him to turn around and go back out. And Tom Brady, Tom Jr., said, I'd be like, Dad, I had baseball practice. I didn't hit the ball well. Can we go to the batting cages tonight? Yep, let's do it. Or can we go up to the field and you can hit me ground balls? And Tom Sr. would say, yep, no problem. Or can we go to the gym and work on, during basketball season, shooting the ball? No problem. And Tom Brady Jr., he never forgot the image of his father entering home tired, really tired from traveling, and then leaving, turning around and going out with him with Tom Jr. still in his work clothes to help his son work on the various sports that he was involved in. And Tom Jr. said, "Being available to me was the greatest gift I could ever receive from my dad. He never said no to me." End of quote. He never said no to me. That's a great testimony about Tom Brady's dad. And it's sad to hear that today, as you probably have heard, it's now public that Tom Brady and his wife Gisele Bündchen have filed for divorce. They're responsible for three children, of course. They have two children of their own, Benjamin, who's 12, and Vivian, who's 9. Tom Brady has another son named Jack, who's 15 years old now, and he had a previous relationship with the actress Bridget Moynihan. If you've ever seen Blue Blood, she's in that. And anyways, he's obviously part of their family as well. So it's just really sad to hear this. These are real kids who are going to go through a tough time because of their parents' divorce. And yes, they're people of means, but they still bleed the same as each one of us do. And that's just sad too. And of course, there are a lot of people who want to say that Tom Brady Jr. is being selfish for wanting to continue to play football in the NFL and continue to follow his passion. And Gisele was hoping he would stay retired. Of course, he was only retired for 40 days earlier this year. She'd been concerned, concussion history. He's never really admitted that, but she said that he pretty much had a concussion every year that she's known him in the NFL. She's worried about his long-term health and future. He's 45 years old now. He's still playing. Father Time's undefeated, but Tom's doing a pretty good job of striking back at the moment. But just the juxtaposition there, really, to me, to hear about this tragic divorce and at the same time, this heartwarming story about Michael McGuire, the coal miner from Kentucky, and how he's just dedicated to his kids. And again, I don't want to judge Tom Brady Jr. for what's going on here, but I just thought, wow, it's an interesting contrast. It's an interesting contrast, to be sure. Let's go to the phones right now. Let's go to Marlene, who is in Lexington, Kentucky. Hi, Marlene.
Yes, I am. I would like to just relay just a little snippet of what I've seen of John Calipari. And sure. I know that this isn't about John Calipari because he is a Catholic. He comes to daily mass when he can, and he sits in the back, and, you know, he's a very humble guy. One time I was waiting to talk to the priest after mass, and the priest grabbed John, and they were just telling him, you know, how wonderful he is, because he's a very charitable guy. Hmm. There's so many under the radar things that he's done. And he's just sitting there, standing there, I should say, just like going, oh, shucks. And he's saying, I'm a sinner, Father, I'm a sinner. And, you know, he seems to be humble. Now, he can't really be humble. I mean, he's got to have some kind of drive to be where he is, right? Mm-hmm. But maybe he's got some true humility about his abilities and stuff. And I'm not trying to make him into a hero. But
sure.
Last year when they had in the paper, like, how many millions he was making that year or whatever, I sent a picture of him in his suit and all dressed up to my family, who, you know, some are lapsed Catholics, some are non-believers, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I said, this is the man who I saw standing in front of the Blessed Mary statue after church, kneeling with his head hung down, praying. And, you know, to me, that said, in this cynical and jaded world, you know, for me to pass along someone who has so much power, really, in addition to money, again, this isn't, you know, I'm not trying to make him into a hero, but we can be proud of him, I think, as a Catholic.
Well, thanks, Marlene, for that phone call. I really appreciate that. Marlene in Lexington, Kentucky. And by the way, we have a station in Lexington, 94.9 FM and also AM 1380, and maybe Marlene, you're listening on one of those stations. And a couple of things I want to say in response to that. I've heard a lot of stories, and when you read, there are a lot of people posting about Coach Cal noticing this coal miner, this picture, and reaching out, and it's kind of gone viral. And when you read comments to these stories, like the one that I referred to earlier in The Athletic, a lot of the commenters are saying, hey, I live in Massachusetts, and a long time ago, really, Coach Calipari got his fame really began when he was coaching UMass in Amherst, Massachusetts, and apparently he still goes back and does a lot of charitable deeds there as well, under the radar that people don't know about. Some people are even trying to criticize him for this one, saying, oh, he's making his good deed public. He's tweeting about this. Hey, the only reason he tweeted about this, because he didn't know who this guy was, and he was trying to find him. He's trying to find anybody that knew him so he could reach out to him. He wasn't doing it, I don't think, for his own personal self-aggrandizement or anything like that. And another thing about humility, too. Humility is not saying, oh, I don't have any gifts, or I'm no good. No, far from it. Absolutely not. That's not humility. Humility is recognizing, hey, we all have gifts. They're all different. God has gifted each person differently, but just acknowledging that they come from God, that everything comes from God. And that's really what humility means. It comes from a word, humus, which means from the earth. God made the first man. I spoke about Adam earlier, the first man from the earth, from the dust of the earth. And that's what when we go to Ash Wednesday Mass, that's what's said when we get the ashes on our forehead. Remember that you are dust, and unto dust you shall return. So we got to go back there at some point into the ground, but there will be a resurrection. So there's some good news at the end. And so, humility is not, oh, you know, woe is me type thing. No, it's just recognizing who and where we come from and where these gifts come from that we have. And we have to be good stewards of those things. And I think Calipari recognizes he's a person who has influence over a lot of young people's lives. A lot of people are looking to him, and it's nice to hear that he's doing all this charitable stuff. So really appreciate that call, Marlene, calling from Lexington, Kentucky. All right, we got some great calls lined up, and if you want to get in on this conversation or talk about something else, maybe you've got a question or a comment, 888-914-9149 is the number to call. Got to take a quick break right now on the Cale Clark Show, but we'll be right back after this. Hang tight. The Catholic Order of Foresters, the sponsor of our studio's line, is hiring today. Several positions are available throughout the United States. Visit relevantradio.com/forester to learn more about how you can find your vocation with Catholic Order of Foresters, an Illinois Life Insurance Society, not licensed in all states. Welcome back to the program, 888-914-9149. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show, only on Relevant Radio. Just before the break, we were talking about Coach Cal and the coal miner, a guy whose name is Michael McGuire, 29-year-old coal miner in Kentucky, raced home from his work in the mine, didn't even change his clothes, didn't even have time to get rid of the coal soot that was just covering him, turning his red beard just pitch black. He raced from work to take his three-year-old son, Easton, to a Kentucky basketball scrimmage and preseason scrimmage. And Coach Calipari saw a picture of him that was posted in his mining gear with his son at the game. Said, I got to find this guy. I got to offer him the VIP treatment. What a great example of fatherhood and also the dignity of work. And Calipari, his grandfather worked in the coal mines in West Virginia. So really, really cool story there. Let's go to the phones right now. Andrew is calling from also Lexington, Kentucky. Hi, Andrew. How you doing?
I'm doing very well, Cale. It's a pleasure Fantastic. To speak with you.
Yeah, thanks for calling in. Appreciate that. It's great to get some calls from Kentucky. This is awesome.
Yeah, I was just wanting to reiterate the point of the faith and beauty in Lexington, Kentucky here. Oscar Shibwe has been a very, very solid point of faith and inspiration for any young man or woman in this area. He grew up with very humble beginnings, didn't see his family for a really long time, comes from, I think, the Congo somewhere,
Okay.
I don't know. The inspiration is just beautiful. It really is.
And for those people who are listening who may not know who Oscar is, can you just tell people who he is and what he's doing right now?
Well, Oscar Tshiebwe was the NCAA player of the year for basketball last season. And he's just amazing. He's a humble man. And he knows how to lead a team, and he's being taught by one of the great leaders, which is Coach Kyle.
Yeah, Coach Kyle, I like him as a coach. I really do. I played a little bit of, not nearly at that level at the Division I level. I did play some very, very minor league college basketball, but I would have loved to have played for a coach like Cal. I think he really puts his players first, and he's been criticized a lot by some for the so-called one-and-done rule, which really isn't. It's becoming not so common in these modern days. And for those who don't know what I'm talking about, this is a common practice where a lot of players would. The NBA had an age restriction rule, which is being lifted. For a while, you could go straight from high school to the NBA, like LeBron James did that. And I think, hey, if you're 18 years old, if you're old enough to work at the coal mines, you should be able to make a living in professional sports. That's just my take. But for a little while, the NBA had an age restriction where you had to be, I think, at least 19 years old to play in the NBA. And so what a lot of players would do is go to college basketball, play in NCAA Division I programs for a year, and then just leave school and go to the pros. And some people think that's a bad idea. They think they should stay and get their degree first, but some say no. Hey, this is a great opportunity to achieve generational wealth for your family if managed properly. A lot of people don't, unfortunately. There's a great 30 for 30 documentary called Broke, which tells the tragic tale of athletes who were taken advantage of in some cases by their agents, lawyers, family members, friends, hangers-on, lost their money, or maybe misused it, didn't spend it well, spent all of it, have nothing to show for it. There's a lot of trappings there and a lot of traps, but hey, part of why people go to university schools of higher education is, of course, to get that higher education. Education is a good goal in and of itself, of course, but it's also, in many cases, to get a job. And hey, if you can get a job like that, you should take it, especially if you might get hurt and the whole thing goes out the window. You blow out your knee, you could lose it all. So Coach Cal always encouraged players when they had an opportunity to go pro, he always encouraged them to do it. And I think he was looking out for them, not necessarily for what would be in his best interest as a coach. Of course, he'd love to keep these great players like Anthony Davis on his team for as long as possible, buttress his resume, but he always tried to do what was best for them. So I respect him for that, really do. All right, let's go to Paul, who's in Youngstown, Ohio. Hey, welcome back, Paul. How you doing?
Hi, Cale. I was just calling to comment on Tom Brady. Personally, I think he should have retired 3 or 4 years ago and stayed retired, went out top of his game, because now he's in his mid-40s, he's aging, he's getting on a losing streak, and I remember after one Super Bowl several years back, his father had made a comment that said, well, I hope he retires now, and that way he can work on becoming a better Catholic again.
And oh, he said that. Well, wow, I hadn't heard that quote. Wow.
I have a lot more respect for coal miners than I do professional athletes in general. I just think he made a mistake. He should have went out at the top of his game, and they hang on too long. Their ego gets the best of them, I do believe.
Yeah, well, certainly that's debatable, and whether he should continue or not. Obviously, he had always said in the past he was going to try to play till he was 45, and now he is 45, and he's still going with no end in sight. And I mean, last year he led the NFL in yardage thrown for QBs. So I mean, it's not like his game had slipped too much at all. But for him to hang on, at some point you have to question, you know, if you can leave with your health intact. I think the winning becomes an addiction. I think the game itself becomes an addiction for him. He actually, believe it or not, you might have heard this, he has a multi-million dollar standing offer on the table from, I think it's Fox Sports, to be their next broadcast analyst, sort of to be in the booth and take over. Of course, Joe Buck and Troy Aikman have moved to ESPN. So the number one team on Fox is now Kevin Burkhardt and former tight end Greg Olsen, who does a great job. But Greg knows his time is limited because as soon as Brady's retired, he's going to be joining the booth in Fox Sports for mega millions. So he's got that cushy landing spot waiting for him, but he's not interested in that right now. I think he's just too addicted to the game. And it's often been said that when it comes to pro football, there are only three ways to leave. It's either on your terms, on their terms, which means the team decides you're done, or on a stretcher. And that's the fear. Yeah. If he hangs on too long, but my goodness, looking at this guy, I was watching the game last night a little bit, and if I didn't know, if somebody told me, oh, he's 26 years old, I'd probably believe it. I mean, like he does look incredible for his age. It's unreal. And I saw another sport, not to get too deep into the sports talk tonight, but I was telling producer Jim that I saw another World Series starts tonight. I was watching a baseball documentary about the Yankees-Dodgers rivalry in the late 70s, 77 and 78. They played each other in the World Series. Reggie Jackson, Mr. October, all that stuff. And that was around the time when Tommy Lasorda was taking over as the manager of the Dodgers. And they're showing some video clips of Lasorda. He started managing the Dodgers, I think, when he was 48 years old. Let me tell you something. He looked a lot older than what Tom Brady does now. He was only 3 years older than what Tom Brady is now. Let's just say that Brady doesn't look nearly as life experienced as old Tommy did at the time. Anyways,
hey Kale, I don't know. I don't think that Tom Brady eats as much pasta as Tom Lasorda used to.
That's true. Yeah, does he eat as much pasta as Tom Lasorda? I don't think so. I really don't think so. I think he's on the TB12 diet, supplements only, and avocado toast and all that stuff. But yeah, no, I don't think so. I think you're correct about that. Well, listen, hey, if you want to call in, switching topics, 888-914-9149 is the number to call. Excuse me. Pardon me. I do want to get to a question that a caller had a couple days ago, and unfortunately we just ran out of time, but it was such a good question. I wanted to actually, a couple of quick questions here. Let me get into this one as well. I don't know who this person's name was, but someone had called in from San Francisco, and we ran out of time, but the question was, in the Apostles' Creed, it says he descended into hell. Why is that? Why is that? Some say he didn't descend into hell. Okay, well, hopefully you're listening today out in San Francisco, but that was not the hell of the damned. When it says that Jesus descended into hell, that was not the hell of the damned. This was, and it's a bit of a translation issue. And remember in the old English translation of the Mass before it was changed to the one we have now, I think it was in 2010, 2011, it used to say in the Creed, he descended to the dead in the English translation of the Apostles' Creed. But then it was changed into, he descended into hell. Now, what's being referred to there is Sheol. Okay, now maybe you've come across this this term in the Old Testament. This place called Sheol. Now, Sheol was kind of a catch-all word. Covered it all, Sheol. It was a catch-all word for the realm of the dead in general, which could include heaven, it could include purgatory, it could include hell as well, the hell of the damned. So you have to be a little bit more specific. Unfortunately, the Creed isn't as specific in terms of where Jesus went when he descended into hell. It was not the hell of the damned, okay? It's really Sheol, this realm of the dead. And where did he go exactly? Well, he went to, most scholars think that he went to what's known in the Old Testament as Abraham's side or Abraham's bosom. Remember when Jesus told the parable in Luke's gospel in Luke chapter 16 about the rich man and Lazarus, the poor beggar Lazarus and this rich man, who's known as Dives, but Dives just simply means rich in Latin. They just, you know, it's not his real name. His real name was John Q. No, I'm only kidding, though. But of course, the rich man goes into hell, and he's in the hell of the damned. He's not in purgatory. He's in the hell of the damned. And everybody in purgatory, by the way, is going to heaven, just so you know. But he looks up and he sees in the parable, he sees Lazarus at Abraham's side. And this was where the righteous dead of the old covenant period went. It was sort of a place of paradise until Christ fully opened the gates of heaven by his passion, death, resurrection, his redemption. So he essentially went there to say, guys, this is great. This is like Club Med, but you have no idea where I'm taking you now. You're going to love this. So he basically opens up the gates of paradise, and the fullness of heaven is now accessible to these saints of the Old Covenant time. So that's what it means. That's what it means. And hopefully that helps to answer that question. Hey, got to take a quick break right now, but I've got another one that's also a burning question and some of your phone calls as well. If you want to call in, 888-914-9149. It's Cale Clark Show right here on Relevant Radio. The Relevant Radio studio line is sponsored by the Catholic Order of Foresters Flexible Premium Life Insurance. For less than $12 a month, a 40-year-old can get $500,000 of coverage. Go to relevantradio.com/forester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
Explaining the Catholic faith and how you can live it and share it too. It's the Cale Clark Show. Have a question? Give Cale a call at 888-914-9149.
Hey, welcome back to the program. Yep, that number to call is, once again, 888-914-9149. We're going to go to the phones right now. We're going to go to Ann in San Diego. Hi, Ann.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great.
Thank you so much. You do a fantastic job. Love it.
Oh, you're very kind. God bless you. So, thank you.
Thank you so much. So I'm a revert to the Catholic Church for almost 17, 18 years. So I absolutely am joyful about my Catholic faith. Now, we all know sometimes things happen, you know, that within the church that are not totally Catholic. So I wanted to just, if I could, just quickly recount an experience and just quickly as I can, and then have you comment on it.
Sure.
Or give your guidance to it. Is
sure,
that okay?
We can try that. Sure.
So this is like around eight years ago. Of course, I won't name the parish. And it was around this time of year, All Saints Day, All Souls Day. And I was teaching catechism to like, I think, fifth graders. Okay. And there was a whole lot of other classes going on too. So then we were called to join like a general assembly, and so we did. And it was a group of, I don't know, 100 kids with their catechism teachers, and the topic was the Day of the Dead. Now what was very disturbing is that I was given flyers to give out to my students, which made the Day of the Dead look like a joyful thing, and like part of the season of like All Souls and All Saints Day, and sort of blended in with it.
Yeah.
And then a woman came up to describe it, and I understand it's part of Mexican heritage, and I totally love the Mexican people. They're awesome, and especially the Catholic heritage is beautiful. But what was problematic is the flyer that the director had given out had listed the elements of the Aztec Day of the Dead. I think it was flowers, marigolds, other things. And one of the important elements was the Aztec God of the Dead. And here we are in a Catholic parish and in a room of 100 children, and the presenter is describing the elements of the Day of the Dead, where they take pictures of loved ones who have died and put flowers around them, and that's really nice. But then I think she may have been convicted, because when she talked about the Aztec God of the Dead, she was very sheepish about it, almost a little ashamed, but mentioned it. So I brought it up to the director, who defended it, and let me see, I was back in the Catholic Church, I guess about 10 years approximately then, and I said, well, this violates the first commandment. I am the Lord your God. You shall have no other gods before me. So we had sort of like an internet email exchange. And I was charitable to her and tried to be very loving, but I was firm. And so just a quick perusal around the internet, it looks like it's it comes from, you know, a Mexican heritage, and
right.
something that is not exactly godly, but that is blended into the Catholic Church, which I know other nationalities do that too. I have a lot of Irish in me, and I know there was the Druids and different things that were ungodly. But my question is, could you comment on
sure.
this? It was disturbing to me. Yeah.
Yeah, well, thanks very much for that call, Ian. It's a really important and very timely thing to bring up, the Day of the Dead Festival, which is, as you mentioned, is quite popular in Mexico and some other Latin American countries and cultures. And it's very ironic that you mentioned this today, that you called today, because I actually answered this question on the Faith Explained program, I believe on today's episode. So I can barely remember what happened 5 minutes ago, let alone earlier today. So check out the podcast for the Faith Explained show. We do a Q&A mailbag segment for every show in the last 8 or 10 minutes of the show. So check that out. I did deal with this in a little bit more depth. So if you want a more full answer, you can check that out. But what I'll say right now is simply this. Now, you mentioned the Aztec god of the dead, and I'll use small g god for this. All right, well, when it comes to these false gods of other, we know that there is only one true God of all the earth, of course, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. But what are these other gods? Well, in the Old Testament, it says this, the gods of the Gentiles are demons. Okay, so that's one possibility. They could be demons in disguise that are trying to lead multitudes astray. That's possible. Or they could simply be nothing. False gods, we can certainly say for sure. But in what we're doing right now on the Faith Explained show is we're going through the book of Exodus and the 10 plagues. I've been trying to explain that the 10 plagues that God sent on Egypt, they weren't just, there's a reason why God did it the way he did. Each one of those plagues that he sent was a judgment on one of the false gods of Egypt. So for example, the plague of darkness, which is the ninth plague, the last one is the death of the firstborn. The ninth plague is the plague of darkness, and that's a direct attack on Ra, the sun god, which was the most powerful god in the Egyptian pantheon, and Pharaoh was thought to be the son of Ra. And like Ramses, right? It has Ra in the name of Ramses, one of the most famous Egyptian pharaohs. So when God strikes darkness into Egypt, everywhere except for where the Israelites lived, they was perfectly shiny and bright there. That's a great metaphor for how we're to shine like stars in the universe. And St. Paul talks about that in the New Testament. The contrast between our lives and paganism should be extreme like that. But this is a definitive defeat of the sun god. It's like God saying to Ra, you know, lights out, pal. And there was no question as to how he was defeated, because the sun didn't come up the next day. There were 3 days of darkness. This is a definitive thrashing of the sun god. So what are there elements that, with respect to the Day of the Dead Festival? Now, one of the things I mentioned on the program today in answering this question was Catholic missionaries had virtually zero success in what is now Mexico prior to the appearance of Our Lady of Guadalupe in the 16th century. And it's incredible how 8 to 10 million people converted from paganism, including Aztec backgrounds and human sacrifice and all kinds of horrific things that were happening at the time, to worship of the one true and living God when Mary appeared in that indigenous form as Our Lady of Guadalupe. Amazing. Now, in terms of trying to, is there a way for Catholics to celebrate the Day of the Dead Festival without damaging or diluting their faith? Well, I'd refer to an article that was written by Father Charles Grondin, and obviously Catholic.com, based out in San Diego, is where he wrote this piece. And he sort of said it is possible for Catholics to celebrate this without diluting their faith, as long as they get this straight. What does God do? And one of the things I said is that what God does in every case, even with ourselves, is God takes what is pagan and makes it holy. Like, we start off as pagans, we're baptized into God's family, and God can do that with cultures and elements within the culture as well, and make it Christian. Like a pagan holiday can be turned into a Catholic holy day. That's what the word holiday means, by the way. And so because of the fact that the Day of the Dead festival it comes from non-Christian origins, not everything that's in it, and this is what Father Grandin said, not everything in it is acceptable to Catholics, but some things could be. Now, it used to be celebrated, by the way, by the Aztecs in the summertime, but when the region became Catholic, that's when it was moved to coincide with All Souls Day and All Saints Day around, you know, Halloween time, right? And November 1st, November 2nd. And so what Catholics would do in trying to reconcile this was they would celebrate this by having family meals at the grave of loved ones, praying for their repose. Neighbors, friends, and family would be invited. And this is really in continuity with the communion of saints. So we do need to pray for the holy souls. And that's what we're doing with our Holy Souls Novena here on Relevant Radio from November 2nd to the 10th. And you can go to relevantradio.com/souls to add the names of your loved ones to our novena. And so that's an element that could be compatible with the Catholic faith, that, you know, the Day of the Dead, thinking about our loved ones who have gone before, praying that they may be, if they're not in heaven already, God will redirect the prayer to somebody else. And also, you might have seen images of skulls, death. It might seem gory to some, but this could be, again, turned to a Catholic purpose. You might have heard of the tradition of memento mori, you know, remember the day of your death, you know, and you'll hopefully live in a much more smarter way. Teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. That's what the Bible says. And so seeing all these skulls and people wearing masks of skulls, it could be seen as, hey, saying, hey, death is a part of the journey. And there's going to also be a resurrection. So as long as we have the elements of the faith right, there could be a way to celebrate the Day of the Dead festival in a Catholic way. Now, some might disagree with that. Some might disagree with that, and I totally understand that. But that's what I would say. That's what I would say. So thank you so much for the call, Anne. Really appreciate that. Listening in San Diego. So hopefully that was legit. Not sure if it was or not, but let's go to Jose now in San Benito, Texas. Hi, Jose. Welcome back.
Thank you, Gil. My question is, how do we know that Jesus went down to hell to open paradise? Is there is it somewhere in the Bible that he opened paradise to his dead?
Well, yeah, I mean, excuse me, pardon me. Is this in the Bible? Yeah, we talked about this earlier when the Apostles' Creed talks about he descended into hell. Is this actually in the Bible? Really good question. Really good question. We do know this. A good place where you can look is in the Catechism of the Catholic Church. Check it out, because the Catechism, as you know, is arranged along different lines. And one of the things that the Catechism is really about what to believe, the Creed, it goes through the Apostles' Creed, how to pray, goes through the Lord's Prayer as a model prayer. And then, of course, it's how to live, the Ten Commandments. Ten Commandments are still very relevant today. So when we go to the Catechism, you can look at its section on life in Christ, and you can look at it and find that there'll be a lot of scriptural quotations when it talks about this part of the... Now, I don't have the section of the Catechism in front of me that talks about he descended to hell. I could look it up. We don't have time right now, but it's at the end. But I would say just go to the Catechism, and you can find the Catechism online too if you don't have a hard copy of it, and look at the section on the Creed. Look at that line in the Creed, he descended into hell, and see what it says. And there are some possible allusions that could... One of the things that will come up probably is Luke chapter 16, where Jesus talks about the rich man Lazarus. I don't know if that's quoted in the Catechism or not, but you can look and you can see. So thanks, Jose, for the call. Appreciate that. Let's go now quickly to Greg in Aurora, Illinois. Hi, Greg.
Hey, Cale, I just want to tell you I enjoy your program.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that.
And I have
thank
a question. Yeah, it's great. You're very knowledgeable. And you were going over the word Ra, and I was just thinking the word Israel has the word Ra in it, Israel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. Nothing to do with Ra, the sun god. That's yeah. Israel, of course, is the name of one of the patriarchs, Jacob. And it's funny because Jacob, of course, tricked his brother Esau, tricked his dad, got the inheritance. And the name Jacob can mean trickster or Jacob the liar, you know. But God changes his name to Israel. And this happens, of course, when he strives with the angel at the river Jabbok. And he's fighting with this angel until dawn. And he won't give up. He won't give up. And God says, well, you shall now be Israel because you have striven with men and with God and have prevailed, you know, in a certain sense. So, and so all of his descendants are known as Israelites. So it really comes from this the etymology of the word comes from one who strives with God. And that's really what prayer is about. Speaking of the catechism says prayer is a battle. It starts off the section on prayer by saying it's a battle. So if you don't feel like praying, hey, you're in good company. You're in really good company. That's our concupiscence coming through, right? We still have the after effects of original sin, even after baptism. We got to keep fighting against it and keep fighting for our faith. This has been the Cale Clark Show. Thank you so much for joining me today. God bless you. Jim produced. Patrick took your phone calls. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.